begin by thanking the elders and thanking Stephen
for the opportunity to stand before you this evening and speak to you from the Lord's holy word. This evening I will be preaching out of the American Standard Version because I accidentally this afternoon left my New King James back at the house. And so the one I have with me is my American Standard. But tonight I'd like to talk with you about a set of events that took place in the Old Testament. Now, if there's anyone who would like a sheet, I'd send it electronically, a PDF, if you will, of 7 points raised in the New Testament as to why we are to study from the Old Testament, let me know after services and I'll send you that by email. After the children of Israel were freed from being enslaved in Egypt, they murmured and complained. And after sinners are freed from bondage to sin through the blood of Christ, there are some who, like the ancient Israelites, murmur and complain due to the circumstances of life. Do I need to press something? There it is. Excellent. If someone deserves to be condemned, and yet mercy is shown to him and his life is spared, how should that person whose life was spared live the remainder of his life? You and I have transgressed against the Almighty God, and we were once in a state of condemnation. Yet God showed mercy unto us and saved us from this condemnation. Therefore, how should I and you live the rest of our lives? I believe that there is a lesson which we should learn and which is very relevant to us, which is found in the first two chapters of the book of 1 Kings. If you will, please turn there. 1 Kings chapters 1 and 2. In these two chapters, there are four men who deserve to be killed. They have done things which are worthy of royal condemnation, but mercy is shown to them and their lives are spared. However, three of these four men are later executed by order of the king, because they were not content with the mercy which had been shown unto them. The names of these four men are Adonijah, Joab, Shimei, and Abiathar. Of these four, only Abiathar escaped execution, because the other three were not content. We'll begin by reading with the passage starting in the fifth verse of the first chapter. Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, that was his mother's name, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. And he prepared him chariots and horsemen, and 50 men to run before him. And his father, who was King David, had not displeased him at any time in saying, Why hast thou done so? And he was also a very goodly man. Goodly in the physical sense of the word, not in the spiritual sense of the word. And he was born after Absalom. And he conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and with Abiathar the priest, and they following Adonijah helped him. And I might mention that Zeruiah is David's sister. This was an act of treason against David and against the man who was supposed to be made king when David died. It was also a transgression against the will of God, because God, through his prophet, had already proclaimed that God had chosen Solomon to be king after David. One of the fundamental matters of each individual's heart is the question of whether or not we respect what God has chosen. How can we claim to believe in God if we do not have a fundamental respect for his right to choose? This world is constantly talking about my right to choose, my right to choose, but God has the right to choose. And he had chosen that Solomon would be the king after David. When it was learned what these men were doing, steps were taken by order of King David to publicly proclaim Solomon as the king. Let's start with verse 28. Then King David answered and said, Call to me Bathsheba. And she came into the king's presence and stood before the king. And the king sware and said, As Jehovah liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity. Verily, as I swear unto thee by Jehovah, the God of Israel, saying, Assuredly Solomon thy son shall reign after me, and he shall sit upon my throne in my stead. Verily, so I will do this day. Then Bathsheba bowed with her face to the earth, and did obeisance to the king, and said, Let my lord King David live forever. And King David said, Call to me Zadok the priest, and Nathan the prophet, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada. And they came before the king. And the king said unto them, Take with you the servants of your lord, and call Solomon my son to ride upon my own mule, and bring him down to Gihon. And let Zadok the priest and Nathan the prophet anoint him there king over Israel. And blow ye the trumpet, and say, Long live King Solomon. Then ye shall come up after him, and he shall come and sit upon my throne, for he shall be king in my stead, and I have appointed him to be prince over Israel and over Judah. When David's order was obeyed, great celebration broke out among the people of Jerusalem, beginning in verse 40. And all the people came up after him, and the people piped with pipes and rejoiced with great joy, so that the earth rent with the sound of them. And Adonijah and all the guests that were with him heard it as they had made an end of eating. And when Joab heard the sound of the trumpet, he said, Wherefore is this noise in the city being in an uproar? While he yet spake, behold, Jonathan, the son of Abiathar, the priest, came. And Adonijah said, Come in, for thou art a worthy man, and bringest good tidings. And Jonathan answered and said to Adonijah, Verily our lord King David hath made Solomon king. Now if Adonijah had lived the rest of his life quietly, and had been content with the mercy shown to him, he may have lived a long time, if God was willing for him to live a long time. But as we will see in just a little while, Adonijah was not content with the mercy which was shown to him. But before we get to that point, later as David was dying, David gave some instructions to Solomon regarding what Solomon was to do on the throne. Among these instructions were requests that Solomon would deal with some of the unfinished business which was left over from David's reign. 1 Kings 2, beginning in verse 5. Moreover, thou knowest also what Joab the son of Zeruiah did unto me, even what he did to the two captains of the hosts of Israel. I'm sorry. Back up. There we are. To the two captains of the hosts of Israel, unto Abner the son of Ner, and unto Amasa the son of Jether, whom he slew, and shed the blood of war in peace, and put the blood of war upon his girdle that was about his loins, and in his shoes that were on his feet. Do therefore according to thy wisdom, and let not his hoar head, which means white head, go down to Sheol in peace. But show kindness unto the sons of Barzillai the Gileadite, and let them be of those that eat at thy table. And the idea of eating at the table is one we're going to be talking about near the end of this lesson. For so they came to me when I fled from Absalom thy brother. And behold, there is with thee Shimei the son of Gera the Benjaminite of Baharim, who cursed me with a grievous curse in the day when I went to Mahanaim, but he came down to meet me at the Jordan, and I swear to him by Jehovah, saying, I will not put thee to death with the sword. Now therefore hold him not guiltless, for thou art a wise man, and thou wilt know what thou oughtest to do unto him, and thou shalt bring his hoar head down to Sheol with blood. I had intended to read verses 50 through 53 of the previous chapter, where Solomon shows mercy unto Adonijah, but because I didn't read it in the order of events, we're going to skip past it, but you can read verses 50 through 53 for yourself. where he shows mercy to him. Now, the first of these men who died was Solomon's brother, Adonijah. Oh, I'm pushing the wrong button. I'm sorry. I'm not used to this remote. Although Adonijah's life had been spared, he apparently desired to have some prestige within Solomon's kingdom. Therefore, he asked permission to marry David's concubine, who was still a virgin, but who had slept beside David during the last days of David's life. In 1 Kings 2, verses 13 through 25. 1 Kings chapter 2, beginning in verse 13. Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, came to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. And she said, "Comest thou peaceably?" And he said, "Peaceably." He said, "Moreover, I have somewhat to say unto thee." And she said, "Say on." And he said, "Thou knowest that the kingdom was mine, and that all Israel set their faces on me, that I should reign. Howbeit the kingdom is turned about, and has become my brother's, for it was his from Jehovah. And now I ask one petition of thee, deny me not." And she said unto him, "Say on." And he said, "Speak, I pray thee, unto Solomon the king, for he will not say thee nay, that he may give me Abishag the Shunammite to wife." And Bathsheba said, "Well, I will speak for thee unto the king." Bathsheba therefore went unto King Solomon to speak unto him for Adonijah. And the king rose up to meet her and bowed himself unto her and sat down on his throne and caused a throne to be set for the king's mother, and she sat on his right hand. Then she said, "I ask one small petition of thee, deny me not." And the king said unto her, "Ask on, my mother, for I will not deny thee." And she said, "Let Abishag the Shunammite be given to Adonijah thy brother to wife." And King Solomon answered and said to his mother, "And why dost thou ask Abishag the Shunammite for Adonijah? Ask for him the kingdom also, for he is mine elder brother, even for him and for Abiathar the priest and for Joab the son of Zeruiah." Then King Solomon sware by Jehovah, saying, "God do so to me and more also, if Adonijah hath not spoken this word against his own life. Now therefore, as Jehovah liveth, who hath established me and set me on the throne of David my king, my father, and who hath made me a house as he promised, surely Adonijah shall be put to death this day." And King Solomon sent by Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he fell upon him so that he died. Now to our minds, Adonijah's request may have seemed to be a perfectly harmless request. But this is because we are not familiar with the customs of the nations of 3,000 years ago in that region. If Adonijah had indeed been given Abishag, it would have both undermined Solomon's power and also increased Adonijah's power. Notice what Adonijah said to Bathsheba. Adonijah had a sense of entitlement. All of his life, his dad had not refused him, we were told in the first chapter. Anything Adonijah wanted, David allowed him to have. And Adonijah had come to believe that because of who his father was, that he was entitled to honor and prestige. And this attitude of entitlement led him to be discontented after mercy had been shown to him. However, for you and me, the main lesson regarding Adonijah should not relate to the historical details of this event so much as it should relate to the mercy which has been shown to each of us individually. Are we content with the mercies and blessings which God has given to the undeserving? After this event, Solomon calls for the high priest who had assisted Adonijah when Adonijah had tried to make himself king. He's mentioned in the first chapter as being among those who went with Adonijah. Solomon dismisses the high priest from its position as high priest and sends him into retirement. 1 Kings 2, starting in verse 26 and 27. "And unto Abiathar the priest said the king, Get thee to Anathoth, unto thine own fields, for thou art worthy of death. But I will not at this time put thee to death, because thou bearest the ark of the Lord Jehovah before David my father, And because thou wast afflicted in all wherein my father was afflicted. So Solomon thrust out Abiathar from being priest unto Jehovah, that he might fulfill the word of Jehovah, which he spake concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. As far as we know, Abiathar's life was spared all the days of his life. God had foretold during the days of Eli that the house of Eli would cease to serve as the high priest. And the position of high priest is now transferred to a different branch of the sons of Aaron. I might mention to you that if you are not familiar with Abiathar, that it would be an interesting study on your part to go through his life. He was supporting David even as far back as while Saul was still alive and was seeking to persecute David. Abiathar was with David through thick and thin. During the days of Absalom's revolt, Abiathar stuck with David. The problem was, at the very end, he chose to dispute the word of God and of David by siding with the oldest surviving son rather than siding with Solomon. Joab hears of the things which Solomon has done regarding the two men who had been with him in the conspiracy to make Adonijah king. Throughout David's reign, Joab had been a very powerful man. After Joab took part in the capture of the city of Jerusalem, he was made commander-in-chief of David's army. As the chief military officer in David's army, Joab had been supported by the army. In addition to this, Joab had been able to manipulate David, to get David to do things which Joab wanted done. For example, if you take a look at the time period after Absalom fled due to having killed Amnon, it is Joab who goes to David through the offices of a woman who he hires to manipulate David into bringing Absalom back from, I think it was Gerar, was where he was fled to. So Joab had always had power. He had had the ability to be a mover and shaker. He learns that both the high priest and Prince Adonijah, who had both been key to his future, had been removed from the equation. Therefore, instead of quietly waiting to see how Solomon would deal with him, Joab decides to take matters into his own hands. 1 Kings 2, verse 28 through 33. And the tidings came to Joab. For Joab had turned after Adonijah, though he turned not after Absalom. And Joab fled unto the tent of Jehovah, and caught hold on the horns of the altar. And it was told King Solomon, Joab is fled unto the tent of Jehovah. This is before Solomon has built the temple. And behold, he is by the altar. Then Solomon sent Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, saying, Go, fall upon him. And Benaiah came to the tent of Jehovah and said unto him, Thus says the king, Come forth. And he said, Nay, but I will die here. And Benaiah brought the king word again, saying, Thus said Joab, and thus he answered me. And the king said unto him, Do as he has said, and fall upon him, and bury him, that thou mayest take away the blood which Joab shed without cause from me and from my father's house. And that Jehovah will return his blood upon his own head, because he fell upon two men more righteous and better than he, and slew them with the sword, and my father David knew it not. To wit, Abner, the son of Ner, captain of the host of Israel, and Amasa, the son of Jether, captain of the host of Judah. And I'll pause for just a moment here and mention that Absalom was a wicked man, so he's not listed among these, but in violation of David's strict orders concerning Absalom, Joab had also slain Absalom at a time when he was not able to fight for himself. He had been caught in a tree, and his head was stuck between two branches, and he was dangling, and Joab and his men murdered him there. But that's not mentioned because Absalom was not a righteous man. So shall their blood return upon the head of Joab and upon the head of his seed forever, but unto David and unto his seed and unto his house and unto his throne shall there be peace forever from Jehovah. Then Benaiah the son of Jehoiada went up and fell upon him and slew him, and he was buried in his own house in the wilderness. And the king put Benaiah the son of Jehoiada in his room, that is, giving him the office that had been Joab's office, over the host, over the army, that is. And Zadok the priest did the king put in the room of Abiathar. He became high priest in Abiathar's place. The book of Proverbs says, "The wicked flee when no one pursues." As far as we know, Solomon had taken no action against Joab before this, even though Joab had already acted against David's kingship on several different occasions. However, Joab did not quietly wait to see what the will of the king was. You and I need to learn to trust the king who has been merciful unto us, because he has spared our lives. We must accept his rule, and we need to be content. I think Brother Todd was talking about that somewhat in the lesson this morning. In the book of Job, in chapter 13, Job said concerning God, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust him." You and I need to develop that same attitude which Job had, and wait quietly upon the Lord, both to deliver, to provide, and because of his great mercy with which he has delivered us. Now there is one more example in the second chapter of 2 Kings that I'd like to discuss with you. When David had fled from Jerusalem, at the time that Absalom rebelled against David, there was a man of the relatives of Saul who came out and cursed David and slandered him. He claimed that David was guilty of the blood of Saul's house, and that Jehovah was giving the kingdom to someone else because this was God's justice against David. This man's name was Shimei, and Solomon began by offering mercy unto Shimei. 2 Kings 2, verses 36 through 38. And the king sent and called for Shimei and said unto him, "Build thee a house in Jerusalem and dwell there, and go not forth thence anywhither. For on the day thou goest out and passest over the brook Kidron," which is a brook just outside the city walls of Jerusalem, "know thou for certain that thou shalt surely die. Thy blood shall be upon thine own head." And Shimei said unto the king, "The saying is good. As my lord the king has said, so will thy servant do." And Shimei dwelt in Jerusalem many days. If your life has been spared by Jesus, and I'm speaking here a spiritual life, and if he has placed conditions upon you that you are to remain within his rule and not depart from his instructions, even if it means you lose your job, lose your social status, would you be content to abide within his mercy? There came a day in which Shimei had to choose between enduring what he considered a loss and abiding within Solomon's mercy. 1 Kings 2, verses 39 through 46. And it came to pass at the end of 3 years that two of the servants of Shimei ran away unto Achish, the son of Maacah, king of Gath, which was one of the cities of the Philistines, I believe. And they told Shimei, saying, "Behold, thy servants are in Gath." And Shimei arose and saddled his ass and went to Gath to Achish to seek his servants. And Shimei went and brought his servants from Gath. And it was told Solomon that Shimei had gone from Jerusalem to Gath and was come again. And the king sent and called for Shimei and said unto him, "Did I not adjure thee by Jehovah and protest unto thee, saying, know for certain that on the day thou goest out and walkest abroad anywhither, thou shalt surely die? And thou saidest unto me, the saying that I have heard is good. Why then hast thou not kept the oath of Jehovah and the commandment that I have charged thee with? The king said moreover to Shimei, "Thou knowest all the wickedness which thy heart is privy to, that thou didst to my David my father. Therefore Jehovah shall return thy wickedness upon thine own head. But King Solomon shall be blessed, and the throne of David shall be established before Jehovah forever." So the king commanded Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, and he went out and fell upon him so that he died. And the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon. Shimei apparently felt that he was entitled to apprehend these two slaves. But he lost his life because he was not content with simply still being alive. Now in this lesson, we have considered three men who perished because they were not content. Adonijah had for almost all of his life been the pampered and spoiled son of the king and had enjoyed all the privileges of being the king's son. After his life was spared, he desired to have some of the same importance which he had previously possessed. And he let that desire cause him to be discontented with the mercy which had been shown to him. Joab, for over 30 years, had been the head military man in Israel, the general-in-chief of David's army. He had become a leader among men and had apparently expected to prosper under Adonijah. When Joab learned that of the two people whose support had been key to his ambitions, that one had been sent into forced retirement and the other one had been killed, Joab was not content to remain humble under the mercy of Solomon, nor did he go unto Solomon in all humility, but rather he insisted upon being killed within the tabernacle. Shimei had been used to living a life based upon his possessions. After his life was spared, he desired to retain what he considered his wealth and his pride. When he discovered that he was in danger of losing his slaves, he was not content to continue within the mercy of Solomon. Prestige, power, and possessions. These three things caused these three men to transgress against Solomon's reign. The New Testament urges us to live lives which are quiet lives. A quiet life proceeds forth from a quiet spirit. And a quiet spirit is a result of being grateful for the mercy of God and being content. Quietness is not the result of how other people treat us, but rather about how we in our hearts react and respond to the mercy of God, how we abide within that mercy. Paul told the Thessalonians that the ambition of their lives should be to lead a life in which they minded their own business and were quiet. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 10 through 12. 1 Thessalonians 4, 10 through 12. For indeed you do it toward all the brethren that are in all Macedonia. But we exhort you, brethren, that ye abound more and more, and that ye study to be quiet, and to do your own business, and to work with your hands even as we charged you. This particular usage of the word study is not one we typically use today, but the idea is that of diligence, the idea of applying oneself to this as something that you strive for. Also, Peter told those women whose husbands were not Christians that they should focus on having a spirit which was gentle and quiet, because such a spirit is very precious in the sight of God. Of course, having husbands that were not Christians meant that the values of these husbands were different than the values of a godly husband would be. But in 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, and there in verse 4, he says, "But let it be the hidden man of the heart, in the incorruptible apparel of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price." No matter how their unbelieving husband treated them, they were to maintain this particular quietness of spirit. This text in Peter emphasizes that their husbands were not godly, but they were to have these kind of hearts because to God this is a beautiful kind of heart. There were some who did not live quiet lives, but instead went around busying themselves with things which were not any of their business. Paul commanded and exhorted those who had authority, excuse me, through the authority which was given unto him as an apostle by Jesus, that such people should work in quietness and eat their own bread. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 11 through 12. For we hear of some that walk among you disorderly, that work not at all, but are busybodies. Now them that are such we command and exhort in the Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work, and eat their own bread. If someone deserves to be condemned, and yet mercy is shown to him, and his life is spared, how should that person whose life was spared live the remainder of his life? Do you murmur and complain? Do you want more than you have? Do you envy other people's lives? You and I have transgressed against the Almighty God, and we were once in a state of condemnation and deserved to perish. Yet God showed mercy unto us and saved us from this condemnation. How should you and I live the rest of our lives? Solomon did not invite these three men, four men, to whom he showed mercy, to live within his palace and to provide for their food and their clothing the way that David had given unto Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan. But our God has done more than just forgiven us. Our God has done more than simply saying to us, I'm not going to punish you. Instead, what he has done is invited us into his family to have a relationship with him. Now suppose back in the days in which the Romans adopted people when they were young adults, that there had been a Roman of around 38 to 40 years of age that had said to an 18-year-old, come, live in my house, dwell with me, and be my child, and when I die, then you will inherit all my possessions. But I would like to have a relationship with you. Now, if that particular person had had the attitude, well, I really don't want to move in with this guy, but what I'd really like to do is inherit his property, so I'm going to wait until just before he dies, and then I'm going to come to him and say, okay, now I'll be your child. That's how some people treat the topic of going to heaven. You see, God does not save us for our benefit primarily. He saves us for his own glory's sake. He saves us for his name's sake. And he saves us because he wants children of God. He wants those who have the same values that he has, who have the same kind of character he has. The Bible tells us that Jesus died for a people who would be his own special legacy, zealous for good works. That word zealous means on fire for, ardent for, fervent for. God is not just saying to you, I want you to escape hell. I want you to come to heaven. No, God is saying to you, I want us to be together. I want to be more than your best friend. I want to be your daddy. And I want you to be my child. And I want to hold you in my arms and treat you with the love and the comfort that only I can give. And so tonight, instead of coming to the Lord with the attitude of what's in it for me, for the Lord's sake and for the great love with which he has loved you and the great mercy with which he has provided for you, surrender all to him and let him be your God. And if we can assist you this evening in responding to the Lord's invitation, will you make your way to the front as together we stand and sing the song?